Radio.
Family, schools and the domestic church. An address by Archbishop Julian Porteous to the Tasmanian Catholic Schools Parents Council.
We talk about a debate about the nature of marriage. It does raise a very fundamental question. What is marriage? What constitutes the nature of marriage? What differentiates marriage from other relationships? And why it's important to retain the traditional understanding of marriage, which very clearly emerges from our Christian understanding of marriage, and of course is shared by other major societies and major civilizations. It always strikes me that it seems strange if somebody said 10 years ago that society would be asking questions about the very nature of marriage itself. We probably thought, that won't happen. But it has. It's come upon us very quickly, very suddenly, and with a great deal of activity, at times quite strong vitriol certainly high emotion around this question of the nature of marriage. I think it's good for us just to, again, as part of a Catholic parents, just to pause to look at what has been our Christian perspective on the nature of marriage, and to say that in, if like Catholic teaching, Catholic understanding, there are marriage has a twofold end. It has what we traditionally theologically call the unitive end, which concerns the good and flourishing of the spouses in marriage, and it has a procreative end, which concerns an openness to new life. One of the key elements of the marriage relationship is the bringing forth and raising of new life. Marriage is about parenthood. And in Catholic understanding, this is integral. I used to say, I think for 40 years as a priest, I remember my little line, I used to say that couples, and over the years I've prepared hundreds of couples for marriage, I used to say children are not an optional extra. They're integral to the meaning of what you do when you commit yourself to each other in marriage. Of course, there will always be couples who are unable to have their own biological children, despite being open to with the desire and the possibility of new life. And this, of course, is a great sadness. I know numbers of couples in this situation, and it's a particular sadness for the couple when they're unable to have children. And so and I know this has happened to a number of couples that I know personally, that it's opened for them a particular invitation to share their nuptial love by the fostering or the adoption of children. And you see that happening, and I said I know numbers of couples who have actually gone down that path. From the perspective of the child, it's important to recognise that social science research overwhelmingly shows that children do their best when they are raised by their biological parents, who are married in a low-conflict familial relationship. I say low-conflict because I think it's true there are moments of conflict that do occur within families. So we'll say low-conflict just to be realistic about life. Now the Pope was, of course, encouraging people to when the plates stop flying, to come to some agreement on the issue that caused the plates to fly. Of course, there are many situations where a child does not have the opportunity to grow up in a loving relationship with their biological father and mother. And we're very conscious of that. The principals of schools say that in one particular school, say that 60% of the children at that particular school do not have the opportunity of having being in a home where there's a loving relationship between both their biological father and biological mother. And this can come about, obviously, by the death of a parent in some instances, but more oftenly, obviously, through separation and divorce. However, even though this happens, it doesn't change the reality of the ideal. And recognise that the best situation, very clearly, is for a child to have the complementary contribution of a biological father and a biological mother. That always remains our ideal. We always strive for that, even if it's not always able to be realised in every instance. one of the things that I'm very aware of as Archbishop and certainly giving increasing attention to in my role here in the Archdiocese is we have to do everything we can to properly prepare those who are seeking to be married and provide ongoing support for married life. I think it's a church, and I'm hoping the Synod will give further expression to this. And two in our schools. I've begun some dialogue with John Mueller about this, and it's certainly a strong conviction of mine that we need to be a lot more proactive in this area of preparing as best we can for marriage and for family life. And that means giving them clearer understandings of the Christian belief about the nature of marriage and family, providing them with formation that's going to give them the best chance of being able to enter marriages on a sound basis. And of course, we're initiating a new program next year for the formation of couples for marriage in the Archdiocese. I really want to concentrate on providing better quality formation of couples prior to marriage. All these things, plus post-marriage formation, are very important elements that we need to be involved with, particularly because of the challenges that we're currently facing in our society about marriage. It's true, isn't it, that marriage and family life are not easy in contemporary society. There are many pressures and many challenges that confront married couples and families, which in a way can be a distraction. Many of these challenges we face are a distraction for couples pursuing what is essential and most important, a focus on marriage itself, couples giving time to fostering and nurturing their relationship, knowing that this has to be something not taken for granted, but constantly encouraged and nurtured. And two, that families need to be able to find the ways which they can positively build up family life. Again, it can't be just taken as a given. It requires not only working with the children individually, but actually the formation of the family and the quality of life that is able to be achieved within the family. I'll come back to that in a moment. As you're aware, there's a Synod of Bishops that's currently meeting in Rome, and these issues are being canvassed in this meeting of bishops. In particular, the Synod is looking at ways which the Church can better assist married couples and families in being able to live out this vital vocation, this first vocation. I often gain one of the lines to couples. It's your first vocation is to be a Christian. Second vocation is to be husband, wife, father, mother. That's your second vocation in life. And so we need to do all we can, as I said, to encourage this. So it's also looking at ways in which the Church can to better speak to and care for those who are living in relationships incompatible with Catholic teaching on sexuality. This is a big issue because people often feel the Church just condemns. It doesn't condemn. It does speak the truth. It seeks to speak the truth in love. So it's not there condemning people. Often it's interpreted as such. And so I know the Council Fathers are very aware of how can we more effectively communicate and how can the Church more effectively be able to speak to people whose living relationships are incompatible with Church teaching about the nature of human sexuality. Certainly one message has come through. A number of the Fathers at the Synod made this comment, and I think it's very important. While there are very many challenges that are facing marriage and family today, it's also true that there are vast numbers of couples who have embraced Christian teaching on marriage and the family and are living it out faithfully and fruitfully. And I know myself, there are so many wonderfully luminous examples of Christian married life in our society. So while we focus on the problems, I think it's also very important that we celebrate the truth that this is able to be lived and realised, and they are wonderful inspirations in what is possible with marriage and family life. So it's important to say, be able to say that it is possible for God's plan for marriage and family to be realised in modern society. one of the fundamental purposes of for stable and loving marriage is clearly the provision of an environment in which children have the best opportunity in life. And as parents, it's something that you're acutely aware of. And there can be no replacement for the stability and love that is experienced in healthy marriage. And this is what I'd like to present to you today, a particular concept which you might like to reflect upon. One of the images that the church has come to use about the nature of the family is to describe it as the domestic church. There's a story I was reminded of St. Paul when he was miraculously set free from the jail, and you might recall the story given in Acts 16. The jailer, knowing what would probably happen if next morning the authorities came and found his prisoners after being shackled very, very effectively loose, that he felt his own life was in jeopardy. He was about to take his own life, and Paul stopped him from taking his own life in that case. And anyhow, then in the conversation that followed, St. Paul said to the jailer, he said, "Believe in Jesus," he said, "and you'll be saved, you and your household." And we're told then that he was baptized at once with all his family, and he rejoiced with his whole household that he believed in God. So this was not an individual conversion, this was a family conversion. It's in instances like this, and that's extreme perhaps, but it's here that we see an expression of the fact that faith, that living faith, becomes a defining element to the life of the family. And this is the case in so many families, in your own families. Faith is a defining element to the nature of your family life. And so that's where in the Second Vatican Council this idea was presented as the family being the domestic church. If you like, the body of Christ, which is a church, in the home. Mind you, this idea has quite ancient roots. It goes right back particularly to St. John Chrysostom, who spoke particularly about this. But in essence, what this means is that when a family, when the parents fully live out their Christian faith, the family itself takes on a very particular character and becomes a domestic church. Family life has been lived out according to the teaching of Christ in word and example, and the family itself becomes an expression of the living worship of God. So the church also says that in these domestic churches, the parents are the first heralds of the faith. That's very true. I see this so often, very beautifully, when little parents explain to children the simple things in the church, or taking to a statue, or getting to light a candle, or saying a little prayer. Parents are the very first people to introduce their children in the life of faith, and the faith of the parents then becomes the faith of the home, lived out in the home. And the home becomes the first school for Christian life. It's where faith is expressed, where love is given, where there's repeated forgiveness, and where there's prayerful worship. So the home becomes the school, first Christian school. In his apostolic exhortation, Familiaris Consortio, on the family, Pope St. John Paul II emphasised the importance of the family both for the vitality of the church and the good of society. It was axiomatic in many ways, but needs to be repeated these days. We need to be able to say that the family is vital, absolutely vital, for the life of the church and the life of society. And so we stated in that document, the family, which is founded and given life by love, is a community of persons, of husband and wife, of parents and children, of relatives. And the family's inner principle is love. Without love, the family cannot live and grow and perfect itself. Without love, man remains incomprehensible to himself, the Pope says. His life is senseless if love is not revealed to him and in him. That's what families are about, aren't they? They're places where love is generated, where love then is transmitted, and children have the opportunity to grow and be nurtured fully as human beings by virtue of this environment of love that is revealed to them through the family. And it's through the family, really, isn't it, that each one of us have learnt what love is, what true love is, what unconditional love is, what self-sacrificing love is. The place we have learnt about love is a family. And so, to that extent, the family is, as Pope St. John Paul II says, the school of love. And unfortunately, when it's dysfunctional, so will it mean that the natural opportunity for children in particular to know love and experience true love is going to be denied them. Without that environment in which we experience and practice love, we will never truly understand what it is and really effectively be able to live it ourselves. So whatever undermines the family, therefore, hurts its members and indeed undermines our whole society. The Catechism of the Catholic Church affirms this when it says that from the beginning, the church was formed from believers and their households. New believers, as we see in the example I quoted before, wanted their whole family to be saved. In our modern world, often hostile to religion, Christian families are extremely important centres of living faith. So in a way, we mustn't just say, well, it's when we go to church that we're living our faith. I say it's in the family where we're living our faith. As Pope Francis recently reminded us, the families are under very serious threat, not just physical attack, but probably more subtly, and I don't think we should underestimate it, under spiritual attack. He said in a recent talk to families, and he quotes what I've just said, he says, families are the domestic church. Where Jesus grows, he grows in the love of spouses, he grows in the lives of children. And that is why the enemy so often attacks the family. The devil does not want the family. He tries to destroy it, to make sure that there is no love there. Married couples are sinners, like all of us. But they want to go forward in faith, in fruitfulness, in their children and in their children's faith. May the Lord bless families and strengthen them in this time of crisis when the devil is seeking to destroy them. So, I could say that the key elements of the church's teaching on family concerns the role of parents. And the church is particularly concerned to make clear that parents are the first educators of their children in faith. So schools and other institutions cannot replace this role as parents, but should only augment what, and can only in the end, augment what is really found in the home. So it's important that parents properly understand the nature of this role as they're being their first educators. And so in a sense, not abrogate this God-given responsibility. By choosing to send a child to school, one does not hand over the responsibility for the child's education to teachers. Rather, the role of the school is to assist them to fulfil their responsibility as the primary educators of their children. It is vital then that parents are actively involved in schools in directing the education of their child. It's very much about what this organisation seeks to do. So I want to encourage you in that. But as I've said this morning, I think it's very important as we look at the role of parents in schools that we do ground it very thoroughly in an understanding of the essential role that parents themselves have in the formation and education of their children. Thank you.
That was Archbishop Julian Porteous with Family, Schools and the Domestic Church. For more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.